folks around you, just greet them, say good morning, welcome to Trinity, all that kind of good stuff.
You're around me, I'll say good morning.
Great job, man, great job, thank you. Zach.
You didn't want to use it.
I'll break it if you don't move it. Hey, all right, come on in, have a seat. Welcome, welcome, glad you guys are here. I'm excited about having the privilege to speak with you guys this morning. Tyler called earlier this week, and if you heard him earlier today, you might be a little suspicious, you know. I mean, he didn't sound, but he calls me up, and Dennis, sounds like the Godfather. This is Tyler. Who? Tyler who? Tyler, where are you? Tyler, you okay? Yeah, I'm going to lose my... Hey, I'm on the phone. Oh, but can you preach this? You know, I don't know. Anyway, I'm glad to be here. Get to open up God's Word with you. And along that, before we do, why don't you just take a second, just a quick moment, and invite Jesus to speak to you individually. Just Jesus, come in here and speak to me. Jesus, I thank you that you fill this room, that you were here this morning long before we walked in, and that you were preparing to speak. So here we are, hearts and ears wide open. Would you speak to us today? Lord, I would humbly ask you to speak through me, that you would use this time to your glory, our good. In your name we pray, amen. Well, this morning what I want to do is invite you into a question that I've been kind of grappling with over the last several weeks, just to kind of invite you to kind of grapple with it with me. It's a pretty straightforward question. The question really is this, is where am I asleep at the wheel in my life? You know, we all understand the metaphor, right? We all understand what asleep at the wheel means. It means you're driving along and you're not paying attention. You may literally be asleep, which I have done numerous times driving down the road, or you just may just be unfocused. It's just this whole idea that life is happening and you're not paying attention, that you're sort of asleep, you're sleepwalking through life. And so the question I've been asking myself is really pretty straightforward. What am I sleeping through? You know, what am I not paying attention to? What am I avoiding? What am I running away from? What am I trying to ignore in my life? Because sleeping through life, sleep at the wheel, ultimately is asleep towards the Lord. It's ultimately running away from the Lord. Asleep at the wheel, sleeping through life is running away from me and who I really am. And it's just the reality. It's sort of an avoidance strategy. It's an escape strategy. And so this morning, I want us to kind of grapple with that question. About a month ago, I was sort of in a stale place in my time with the Lord every day. Couldn't quite figure out what to read and where to go, where to open the Bible. And I thought, you know what I really want to do today? I just want to read a book. I want to read a book of the Bible where I can sit down, start to finish, and finish it all in one setting. And out of that came this kind of goofy idea. I decided to start with the shortest book of the Bible and keep reading along and go, you know, get a little bit longer, you know, kind of start with a tweet to a postcard to a blog post, a magazine article. You get the idea. And so I started with 3 John. 3 John has 219 words in it. Of course, Jeremiah has 33,000, and that's going to be a problem. I don't know how that's going to work in one day. We'll see, right? It's the longest book. But on the 11th day of this kind of goofy strategy, I ended up in the book of Jonah. And so I started reading, and that's where the question comes from. And so this morning, I'm going to invite you to turn over to Jonah chapter 1. And I'm going to be using the New International Version. Tyler tends to use the English Standard Version. Both great, but I've just been using the NIV for a long time. So if you've got your app or whatever, that'll help you figure out where we are. My words sound a little different than the way he would read it. So... But I want to take us to Jonah chapter 1, which, by the way, has 1,082 words in it, just in case you're counting. And we're going to do about 200 of them. All right, so Let's Jonah chapter 1. It says, the word of the Lord came to Jonah, son of Amittai, and the Lord said, go to the great city of Nineveh and preach against it, because its wickedness has come up before me. So verse 1 introduces us to our hero. Our hero is Jonah. You dig around in the Kings and the Chronicles, you meet Jonah there as well. And in that context, Jonah is a prophet to the nation of Judah. And all along the way up till now, he has been the prophet of good news. He has come to the kings and been able to say, hey, the kingdom of Judah up and to the right, we're growing, we're going, we're going to be victorious, we're going to be expanding the kingdom. Life is going to be great in the nation of Judah, because God's going to be at work. And then all of a sudden, God rips Jonah's life to shreds, dives into this nice, neat life that Jonah has, and says, Jonah, I got a job. I want you to go to Nineveh. Nineveh is the city, it is the core, it's the location, the focus of the most wicked, vicious, violent people of Jonah's day. These are the enemies of all enemies, and God says, hey, Jonah, I want you to take your message, I want you to go represent me in the city of Nineveh, and instead of telling them everything's going to be great, I want you to tell them everything's turning south. I want you to go tell them that God is coming, and he is going to judge, and he is going to lay waste over the city of Nineveh. This is not a fun assignment. This, and it's a terrifying place to go. So Jonah, being the obedient God follower he is, verse 3, but Jonah ran away from the Lord and headed for Tarshish. He went down to Joppa, where he found a ship bound for the port, for that port, and after paying the fare, he went on board, sailed for Tarshish to flee from the Lord. Now, how many people know where Tarshish is? Anybody? That's the same here. Okay, so that's good. So look. Look, Nineveh, kind of for your orientation, right? Nineveh is going to be kind of off to the east. It's in Iraq. It's modern-day Mosul. Tarshish is 2,500 miles to the west. It's on the coast of either France or Spain. Jonah is headed to the Riviera. Jonah is not just running away. He's going on vacation. He is going to escape. And so he goes down to the port. It's not like going out to the airport where there's a flight every couple of hours. Ships weren't leaving all the time. But the ship is about to leave, and it's headed to Tarshish. And I think in my mind, he probably walks down and going, a ship to Tarshish. Thank you, Lord. What a gift. You are blessing my running away. It is interesting, when we run away and avoid, we fall asleep, things work pretty well for a while, but not forever. Verse 4, then the Lord sent a great wind on the sea, and such a violent storm arose that the ship threatened to break up. All the sailors were afraid, and each cried out to his own God, and they threw the cargo into the sea to lighten the ship. But Jonah had gone below deck, where he lay down and fell into a deep sleep. The captain went to him and said, how can you sleep? Get up and call on your God. Maybe he will take notice of us and we will not perish. And so you can see, this is where my question comes from, right? Where am I like Jonah, asleep in a storm? But let me finish reading it and then we'll come back and talk about all this. Then the sailors said to each other, come, let us cast lots to find out who is responsible for this calamity. They cast lots and the lot fell on Jonah. So they asked him, tell us, who is responsible for making all this trouble for us? What kind of work do you do? Where do you come from? What's your country? How did you get us in this mess, right? And can you just see all the sailors around? They're all firing questions left and right. And Jonah answered, I am a Hebrew, and I worship the Lord. I worship Yahweh, the God of heaven, who made the sea and the dry land. This terrified them, and they asked, what have you done? They knew he was running away from the Lord because he'd already told them so. It sounds like he was bragging, hey, I'm running away from God. The sea was getting rougher and rougher, so they asked him, What should we do to you to make the sea calm down for us? Well, pick me up, throw me into the sea, he replied, and it will become calm. I know that this is my fault, that this great storm has come upon you. Jonah would rather die than wake up. Jonah would rather die than change. That's pretty critical. This is an incredible avoidance strategy. Instead, the men did their best to row back to land, but they could not, for the sea grew even wilder than before. Then they cried out to the Lord, "Please, Lord, do not let us die for taking this man's life. Do not hold us accountable for killing an innocent man for you. For you, Lord, have done as you pleased." Then they took Jonah, threw him overboard, and the raging sea grew calm. At this, the men greatly feared the Lord, and they offered a sacrifice to the Lord and made vows to him. Jonah is asleep in the bowels of the ship in an insane, crazy, supernatural storm that's raging outside. It's easy for us to do that. There's plenty of reasons to fall asleep these days. Our world is insane. Our world is crazy. Our world is a raging storm. And it's tempting to avoid the chaos of our world and the chaos of our lives by falling asleep, numbing, avoiding, running away. The problem with running away, ultimately, we're running away from God. The problem with avoidance is ultimately we have to avoid God. And so this sleep of Jonah, it's a metaphor, obviously. This is a picture of how we are drawn to live our lives. And this, by the way, Jonah is just the next in a long, long line of people who've been running away since Adam and Eve ate the fruit. They ate the fruit and they ran away from God. And people have been running away ever since, and so have we. Because we'd rather sleep than deal with reality. We'd rather sleep than face change. So this morning, I'm going to give us four diagnostic questions. They're really pretty simple. They're very straightforward. It's not real complicated. You can probably fill in the blanks on your own, and some of you already have, because you're trying to guess what I'm going to say. And it's probably exactly what you think I'm going to say, because this is not going to be a complicated talk. Okay, but here we go. The first one is this. What part of my life am I sleeping through? We got to ask that question. I almost guarantee you, you're sleeping through something because it is just so stinking hard to stay awake. So what am I avoiding? Where am I running away from God? Is there someplace I need to wake up and engage in life? And again, it's hard, it's scary, there's pain. You're experiencing pain. You've got broken relationships. You've got scary futures. You've got sin you don't want to deal with. You've got wounds, and avoid what that means. You've got responsibilities that you'd rather shirk. All of us do. And we could go through all of these over the next half an hour and look at all kinds of things individually. But I want to do this a little bit differently, partially because this is what God's been stirring up in me for the last couple of weeks. And so we're going to take a little bit bigger view of this, I think. And I want to do it this way. All of us are made up of being thinkers, feelers, and doers. You have a mind, you have a will, you have an emotion. You have those three things. All of us are made up of that. We're thinkers, we're doers, we're feelers, however you want to put it together. And all of us have, of those three, one of those three is the dominant way you approach life. You are either primarily a thinker or a feeler or a doer. One of the other ones kind of comes in and supports, supplements, helps with that. And the third one, we ignore. We avoid. We run from. We try to sleep to. We don't want to have. Right? I mean, so you're either a thinker, feeler, or doer primarily. The other one comes along and supports that. And all of these things, by the way, thinking, doing, feeling is our attempt that we chose a long time ago on trying to control the life that we have. It's our attempt to make life work, often without the Lord. And so it means today about a third of us in here are thinkers, about a third of us are doers, and about a third of us are feelers. So those of you who are thinkers, You respond to life by, well, what do I think about that, right? You live in your head. You live with ideas and thoughts and words. You are constantly thinking. You are constantly asking questions. You are constantly trying to figure life out. You're trying to figure out what to do. You're trying to figure out how to solve the problem. You are trying to figure out, you know, the next steps and all that stuff to do. And you trust your ability to figure things out, to think through the issues and the problems. And you say things like, well, I think, or in other words, in my opinion, my thought about that is, let's think about that for just a minute. And that's the way you roll, and that's how you try to make life work. Those of you who are doers respond to what's happening around you by instinctively asking, what should I do? What do I do next? What needs to be done? Right? You're focused on accomplishing. You tend to be busy. You tend to look around the room and notice everything that needs to be done. You walked in here this morning kind of going, you know what they ought to do is. Right? That's how you entered the room. That's how you enter every room. Is I, you know what? I need to do this and I need to do that. And you trust your ability to do something, about whatever's going on around you. And you say things like, the way you solve that problem is, the plan for handling this should be, today I accomplished, and you are busy, 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 busy. If you're a feeler, those of you who are feelers, and again, about a third of you probably are, you look around by instinctively asking the question, what am I feeling here? You walk into a room and you feel the vibe. You feel the emotions. You feel the people. You can walk in and almost immediately know what everybody in the room is experiencing, who's up, who's down, who's up. My wife, who's a feeler, told me a week or so ago, she walked into church. She walked in, she looked around, and immediately she saw a woman standing back to her. The woman is like this, and Susan kind of goes, she needs me to sit by her today. She needs a friend. That's a feeler. And there are people, that's the way you roll through life. And you say things like, I sense, I feel, my gut tells me, I get the impression. It's all of those things. So about a third of you are thinkers, about a third of you are feelers, about a third of you are doers. But on the flip side, that means there's about a third of us in here who would rather die than really think, that would rather die than really do, that would rather die than really feel. It's not that you don't think, feel, or do. Your thinking is unproductive. Your doing is often busy. Your feelings are damaged. You don't trust thinking, feeling, or doing. But on the flip side, you trust thinking, feeling, or doing. And so you are asleep. This is kind of what I've been kind of thinking through. You're asleep to one-third of the way God wired you. And that causes damage. Damage for you and damage for the folks around you. And so let me flesh this out. The only way I know how to flesh it out without spending hours and hours trying to take all these things and punk find them is to kind of walk you through my own world. And I tend to be, I figured this out a while back, that I'm a thinker. I think, and those people who know me well know my mind is a hamster in a cage, man. I am running all the time. My mind is going all the time. I've got a bazillion questions I'm always trying to resolve. I'm thinking. And then I become a doer trying to figure out what to do about it. But I tend to avoid feelings. Not all feelings, by the way. I'm thrilled with happy feelings. I'm somewhat comfortable with angry feelings. I despise fearful, sad feelings. I will avoid them at all costs. And that, by the way, has caused incredible damage over the years if you have a feeling wife. Most of you know my dad has dementia. He's 95. I moved him down here, by the way. The last time I preached, I had not done that. I moved him down here in March. He's over at Garden View. They're doing a great job. Love that place. My dad is sweet. He's winsome. He's a joy to be around most of the time. But his little mind, I was there yesterday, and he just could not. There was some thought he was trying to tell me about something, and he could not. It's hard to watch. It's just tragic to watch. And so when it comes to dealing with my dad, my thinking immediately kicks in. I try to understand everything he's going through. I try to understand what this disease is. I try to understand and figure out what I need to do to fix this, right? I analyze, I process, I ask questions endlessly till it makes me and my wife crazy. And then my doer kicks in, and I start trying to figure out, what am I going to do to fix this mess? What do I need to do for my dad? Am I doing enough for my dad? Am I doing the right things for my dad? Is there something I need to do different to make his life better? And it's all this kicks in. And a lot of you are nodding. You're going, yeah, I get what you're saying. You think, and you're trying to do, you're trying to solve it, right? And what that does is put me in a place of great performance issues where, am I doing enough? And thinking and doing leads me into this crazy cycles. And when I see him, I went over yesterday, so I'm trying to figure out, how do I help him find in his mind these thoughts and piece them all back together? What can I do? So ultimately, I shaved him. It was something I could do to... But here's where the being asleep to my feeling part of me is a bad thing. My dad doesn't need me to figure this out. My dad doesn't need me. I can't fix this. What my dad needs is for me to be present and to honor his feelings of frustration and fear and anger at this disease. But because I'm so busy thinking and doing and asleep to feeling, I find that very, very difficult. I find that painful. I find it almost impossible. And ultimately, what ends up happening, because I'm thinking, doing all the time, I put pressure on my dad to somehow do better, or he feels this pressure to do better than he's currently doing because he senses it from me. Is that making sense? You guys with me on this? Okay. But see, that's how I roll. Others of you walk in the room as a feeler. You feel it all. And then you start thinking about all the things that are going on, but you don't really know quite what to do, or you just start doing without really thinking it through. Some of you are doers. You're so busy, you are wearing us out. We're exhausted just watching you. And you're doing, 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 doing. But you're dead to feeling or thinking or something. And when we're asleep to a third of the way God put us together, we do damage. We create storms. And our attempts to control life, remember, that's what thinking, feeling, and doing is. It's our attempt to control the chaos in our world leads us into places of storms, just like Jonah. Because if you overuse thinking, doing, or feeling, which is what we do, once we find ourselves in a place of discomfort, we double down on the very things that we lean on. And you begin to overthink and overdo and overfeel and over, and it stirs the pot. And like I said, these things cause damage. So let me give you the second question so I don't run out of time here. And that's, how do I know if I'm asleep? Right? If you're asleep at the wheel, do you know you're asleep at the wheel? If you're driving down the road, yeah, you begin to go, okay, I'm kind of nodding. But I can reflect on some trips I've driven where miles go by, and I have no idea. I think I was sound asleep. So what are some of the symptoms? Well, let me just give you a couple real quick. One is you become emotionally disconnected. If one of these things is dead, and what I mean by that, you'd think that'd only be feelings, but think about Jonah. His emotions are wrong. His emotions in this story do not fit. He's numb. When he wakes up and they wake him up and everybody is terrified and the ship is going to go down and everybody, and he's like, what the diff, you know, who cares, whatever. He's got a level 2 response for a level 10 event. And you could go, well, maybe he's like Jesus. He just did the boat in peace. Even Paul in Acts 27, when he's in the middle of a ship that's about to be a shipwreck, is busy, busy. He's helping, he's serving, he's talking, he's praying, he's coaching. No, this is avoidance. He's numb here. His emotions are totally inappropriate, you know. And so if you're way more angry than you should be, or maybe more sad than you should be, or way more afraid, or you know, where it's just out of proportion to what's going on, it probably means there's some part of your life where you're asleep, where you're running away, you're trying to avoid. Right? Jonah's living in denial. His emotions are out of whack, but so is his thinking. Look at verse 9. Check out this theology. This is incredible. And he stands up. They said, "Now, who are you? What you're doing?" And he stands up and goes, "Well, I am a Hebrew. I worship the Lord Yahweh, the God of heaven and earth, the God of heaven who made the sea and the dry land." Yahweh is the Tyler's led us here in Exodus chapter 3. Yahweh is the personal name of God, the relational name of God. It's the one where he says, "Who are you?" "I am Yahweh. It's my name." You know, God of heaven, this Elohim, it's a different Hebrew word. It implicates power and might, creative juice. And so what Jonah is saying, hey, my God is the relational God of the Hebrews. My God is the powerful God that made it all. He loves, he cares, and he's strong, and he's mighty. And this is my God. And he made it all. I mean, it's incredible theology. And he thinks he can run away from this God. Do you see the disconnect? His theology is pristine, but it's totally disconnected from his life. And so often when we run away, we become so stinking hypocritical because our theology is fabulous. And our life does not match up at all. At all. And so so evidently they kind of, there's a little bit of a rep. They get a little bit scared about who this is. And then finally, the other way you know you're asleep is that you develop distance from God and the other people. You know, Jonah wouldn't pray. He doesn't pray. He never prays. He talks to God a little bit. It's mostly because he's mad. There's no record that he ever cried out to God on the ship like the rest of the sailors. They called on him to pray. He didn't pray. And when you're running from God, you kind of silence up God's voice. You kind of numb yourself to him because you're running away. You want to keep, that place is numb. If you go to the Lord, he's going to wake it up, and you don't want him to wake it up. You want him to leave it alone. So why should we even wake up? It was working for Jonah. Jonah's in the bowels of the ship. It is storm and tossing, and he is sleeping like a baby. He is all snuggled up down in the ship. Life is good. He is at peace. Why wake up? Life is working for me. Right? Thinking, doing, feeling, whatever yours is, you have figured out a way to make your life work for you. And you're loving it. So why should I mess up my life and my happy place and the way it works for me so I can control what I want to control and I can avoid stuff I don't want to get messed with? Why should I wake up? Because the ship is going down. Right? The ship is going down. Avoidance only makes things worse. And all of a sudden, you're surrounded by broken relationships, and all of a sudden, you're surrounded by things that are falling apart. And the sailors find themselves in this storm because of Jonah. And when you are asleep to some part of your life, the people around you are paying for it. So how do you know when it's time to wake up? Because somebody rocks your world. We'll talk about that in just a second, but that's the reality of it. We never sin in a vacuum. We sometimes think, well, it's just me, it's just my life, what difference does it make? But it does make a difference. It shapes everybody else. And by the way, men and women, some of you this morning, and we're not going to go into this, let me just drop this little goodie on you and you process it the way you want. Some of you this morning, your world is all a mess. And you're kind of going, what did I do wrong? It's not what you did wrong. It's what somebody in your world did wrong that has rocked you. You're the sailor on somebody else's boat. And they're asleep. And you're paying for it. That's a tough place to live. But you know what? The Lord gets to you. Just He provided for the sailors. He will provide for you. So, how do we wake up? Well, waking up almost always requires some kind of really honest, painful feedback from somebody in our world. It'd be great if we wake up on our own, we'd stop hitting the snooze button. But it almost always requires the people who are suffering because of us to get up in our face and tell us this is no longer working. This has to change. And the problem is, if we want to go back to sleep, we'll kind of go, okay. But it almost always comes from some kind of a confrontation. Somehow, if we choose to listen well to what the people in our world are telling us of the damage that we're doing and the hurt that we're bringing or whatever it may be, if we're willing to listen well and then stop. And what Jonah could have done, what he could have done is said, oh my gosh, I'm so sorry. I am so sorry. Will you guys forgive me, Lord? I come to you. I'm yours, whatever. And he said, no, 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 no. I would rather die than change. I would rather bring shipwreck to all of you, the loss of all the cargo, than change. So if we don't listen to the feedback, ultimately what it requires a storm to wake us up. This whole storm going on is because God loved one man. All this damage to property and fear of life and limb, it's because God loved one man. All this suffering that gets poured out, the terror, is because of one man. There is no place we can run that God can't find us. There is no depth of sleep that we can get into that God can't find us. There is no attempt to avoid that God can't track us down. We can outrun God, outsleep God, outwit God, outweight God, outmaneuver God, or outsin God. He will come and get us. And it will not be pretty. Craig Barnes writes about it this way. He says, it can be pretty dramatic when God comes looking for us. We tend to think of grace as the concession of a polite God who says, well, that's okay, sweetheart. Please try not to do that again. But grace is whatever it takes for God to come and get us. It can be confrontational, frightening, disruptive, demanding, but in the end, it saves our lives. And so the way you wake up might be a conversation, a really tough conversation. It might be a storm, but there is a third alternative. And instead of running away, we can choose to run to. And instead of avoiding, we can invite in, right? And we can preemptively invite God in to the places we're sleeping. We can preemptively say, Jesus, will you come wake me up? Will you reveal my blind spot? Will you come and get me out of this place? Will you enable me to step into this thing that I'm avoiding? We can turn and we can ask Jesus, Jesus, will you begin to transform me in this one area? And look, over the years, through hard conversations and through storms in my own life, is how I figured out that I didn't do feeling well, that I only did half the feelings. It was a painful realization. And I've had to learn how to say, Jesus, you know I hate this. You know I am utterly terrified of tears. You know I'm utterly terrified of this sadness, fear. And that fear, it'll totally consume me and I'll never recover. I mean, it's out there. And some of you get it. And I've had to say, Jesus, even with my dad, I will regularly now pray, Jesus, I don't want to miss out on this time with my dad because I'm afraid to be sad. But I can't be sad without your help. I don't want to go there. I hate going there. But I know I'm going to miss out and regret if I don't. I invite you, Jesus, to come and teach me and take me there. I welcome you to come and take me there. And so I've had to learn how to ask the man of sorrows to teach me how to do sorrow. And I'm better. I still suck, but I'm better. And I still run from it and have to confront it all the time. And I've had to do it. There is this practice called welcoming prayer. And the idea is very simple. It's just welcoming Jesus into some place in your life. It's welcoming him to come and disrupt or change or do whatever he needs to do. And I've been able to use that off and on in my life over the last several years. And this morning, to wrap up our time, I just want to lead you into a time of welcoming prayer. Just a couple of minutes. And so I'm going to ask you to sort of pray along with me as you will, to receive this over you, but also to respond, you know, especially if the words fit where you are. And so just close your eyes for a minute. I'm going to pray for us. I'm going to lead us into a moment of, and again, you can do this all the time, but I'm going to lead you into a moment of welcoming prayer. All right? Jesus, you are welcome here today. You are welcome to enter into all the parts of our lives and to wake us up. We would all rather be asleep and we would all rather run away, but we don't want to miss out on the moments that you have for us. You are welcome to rouse us from our slumber and avoidance. You are welcome to chase us down wherever we try to run. You are welcome to bring confrontation and storms if that's what's required to wake us up. Jesus, you're welcome into our slumber today. Jesus, you're welcome into our thinking today. Welcome to invade our minds and our thoughts. Your thoughts, Jesus, are the clearest. Your thoughts and words are the purest. And you're welcome to invade our minds and awaken us, to expose our desire to think our way out of problems. You're welcome to wake up our mind about the things that we've been avoiding and thinking about. And you're welcome to bring us out of our fuzzy thinking into clarity. Jesus, you're welcome into our thinking today. Jesus, you're welcome into our doing today. You're welcome to invade our will and our steps and our actions and our choices, to expose our desire to be busy and avoid pain. You said you laid out good works in front of us for us to walk into them, and we welcome you to guide us and to lead us so that we can walk into those steps. Wake us up to our will to choose to, so that we will choose to enter into the hard parts of our life. Bring us out of our stupors of laziness as well and our avoidance to do the right thing. And Jesus, you are welcome into our doing today. Jesus, you're welcome into our feelings today. You're welcome to invade our emotions and lead us into emotions that we're afraid of. Jesus, teach us the full range of emotional health and color. You're welcome to teach us the highest joy and the deepest sadness. You're welcome to enable us to enter into fear, but to replace it with faith, to awaken the sleeping parts of all of our emotions. And so, Jesus, you are welcome into our emotions today. And Jesus, you are welcome here in every way. Welcome to lead us to more fully experience all of the abundance life that you have offered. Welcome to shake us to the core. Welcome to remake all of us wherever it is necessary. Welcome to enter into the parts of us that we have buried so deep so that we can avoid them. So you're welcome to bring the fullness of your life-shaking love into our lives. Jesus, you are welcome here today. Amen.